Chapter 33. Shiny tall adder posed, grim upwards, opposite the double door of the drawing room, haunted, it was said, by evoked ghosts, and frequented, it was to be supposed, by fugitive revolutionists. The cracked white paint of the panels, the tarnished gilt of the moldings, permitted one to imagine nothing but dust and emptiness within. Before turning the massive brass handle, Peter Ivanovich gave his young companion a sharp, partly critical, partly preparatory glance. "No one is perfect," he murmured discreetly. Thus, the possessor of a rare jewel might, before opening the casket, warn the profane that no gem perhaps is flawless. He remained with his hand on the door handle so long that Razumov assented by a moody oh. "Perfection itself would not produce that effect," pursued Peter Ivanovich, "in a world not meant for it. But you shall find there a mind, no, the quintessence of feminine intuition which will understand any perplexity you may be suffering from by the irresistible, enlightening force of sympathy. Nothing can remain obscure before that inspired, yes, inspired penetration, this true light of femininity." The gaze of the dark spectacles in its glossy steadfastness gave his face an air of absolute conviction. Razumov felt a momentary shrinking before that closed door. "Penetration? Light," he stammered out. "Oh, you mean some sort of thought reading?" Peter Ivanovich seemed shocked. "I mean something utterly different," he retorted, with a faint, pitying smile. Razumov began to feel angry, very much against his wish. "This is very mysterious," he muttered through his teeth. "You don't object to being understood, to being guided?" queried the great feminist. Razumov exploded in a fierce whisper. "In what sense? Be pleased to understand that I am a serious person. Who do you take me for?" They looked at each other very closely. Razumov's temper was cooled by the impenetrable earnestness of the blue glasses meeting his stare. Peter Ivanovich turned the handle at last. "You shall know directly," he said, pushing the door open. A low-pitched grating voice was heard within the room. Enfin, in the doorway, his black-coated bulk blocking the view, Peter Ivanovich boomed in a hearty tone with something boastful in it. "Yes. Here I am." He glanced over his shoulder at Razumov, who waited for him to move on. "And I am bringing you a proved conspirator, a real one this time." Unra I selu I la. This pause in the doorway gave the roved conspirator time to make sure that his face did not betray his angry curiosity and his mental disgust. These sentiments stand confessed in Mr. Razumov's memorandum of his first interview with Madame de S. "The very words I use in my narrative are written where their sincerity cannot be suspected. The record, which could not have been meant for anyone's eyes but his own, was not, I think, the outcome of that strange impulse of indiscretion common to men who lead secret lives, and accounting for the invariable existence of compromising documents in all the plots and conspiracies of history. Mr. Razumov looked at it, I suppose, as a man looks at himself in a mirror, with wonder, perhaps with anguish, with anger or despair. Yes, as a threatened man may look fearfully at his own face in the glass, formulating to himself reassuring excuses for his appearance marked by the taint of some insidious hereditary disease. 2. The Egeria of the Ushan Mazzini produced, at first view, a strong effect by the death-like immobility of an obviously painted face. The eyes appeared extraordinarily brilliant. The figure, in a close-fitting dress, admirably made, but by no means fresh, had an elegant stiffness. The rasping voice inviting him to sit down. The rigidity of the upright attitude with one arm extended along the back of the sofa, the white gleam of the big eyeballs setting off the black, fathomless stare of the enlarged pupils, impressed Razumov more than anything he had seen since his hasty and secret departure from St. Petersburg. A witch in Parisian clothes, he thought. A portent. He actually hesitated in his advance, and did not even comprehend, at first, what the rasping voice was saying. "Sit down. Draw your chair near me. There, he sat down. At close quarters, the rouged cheekbones, the wrinkles, the fine lines on each side of the vivid lips, astounded him. He was being received graciously, with a smile which made him think of a grinning skull. We have been hearing about you for some time. He did not know what to say, and murmured some disconnected words. The grinning skull effect vanished. And do you know that the general complaint is that you have shown yourself very reserved everywhere? Razumov remained silent for a time, thinking of his answer. I, don't you see, am a man of action, he said huskily, glancing upwards. Peter Ivanovich stood in portentous expectant silence by the side of his chair. A slight feeling of nausea came over Razumov. What could be the relations of these two people to each other? She like a galvanized corpse out of some Hoffman's tale, he the preacher of feminist gospel for all the world, and a super revolutionist besides. This ancient, painted mummy with unfathomable eyes, and this burly, bull-necked, deferential. What was it? Witchcraft, fascination. He's for her money, he thought. He has millions. The walls, the floor of the room, were bare like a barn. The few pieces of furniture had been discovered in the garrets, and dragged down into service without having been properly dusted, even. It was the refuse the banker's widow had left behind her. The windows without curtains had an indigent, sleepless look. And two of them the dirty yellowy-white blinds had been pulled down. All this spoke, not of poverty, but of sordid penuriousness. The hoarse voice on the sofa uttered angrily, "You are looking round. Kirill Sidorovich. I have been shamefully robbed, positively ruined." A rattling laugh, which seemed beyond her control, interrupted her for a moment. A slavish nature would find consolation in the fact that the principal robber was an exalted, and almost a sacrosanct person, a Grand Duke, in fact. Do you understand, Mr. Razumov? A Grand Duke, no. You have no idea what thieves those people are. Downright thieves. Her bosom heaved, but her left arm remained rigidly extended along the back of the couch. You will only upset yourself, breathed out a deep voice, which, to Razumov's startled glance, seemed to proceed from under the steady spectacles of Peter Ivanovich, rather than from his lips, which had hardly moved. What of that? I say thieves. Voleurs. Voleurs. Razumov was quite confounded by this unexpected clamor, which had in it something of wailing and croaking, and more than a suspicion of hysteria. Voleurs. Voleurs. Vol. No power on earth can rob you of your genius, shouted Peter Ivanovich in an overpowering bass, but without stirring, without a gesture of any kind. A profound silence fell. Razumov remained outwardly impassive. Had is the meaning of this performance, he was asking himself. But with a preliminary sound of bumping outside some door behind him, the lady companion, in a threadbare black skirt and frayed blouse, came in rapidly, walking on her heels, and carrying in both hands a big Russian samovar, obviously too heavy for her. Razumov made an instinctive movement to help, which startled her so much that she nearly dropped her hissing burden. She managed, however, to land it on the table, and looked so frightened that Razumov hastened to sit down. She produced then, from an adjacent room, four glass tumblers, a teapot, and a sugar basin, on a black iron tray. The rasping voice asked from the sofa abruptly, Leskadox, have you remembered to bring the cakes? Peter Ivanovich, without a word, marched out onto the landing, and returned instantly with a parcel wrapped up in white glazed paper, which he must have extracted from the interior of his hat. With imperturbable gravity he undid the string, and smoothed the paper open on a part of the table within reach of Madame de S.'s hand. The lady companion poured out the tea, then retired into a distant corner out of everybody's sight. From time to time Madame de S. extended a claw-like hand, glittering with costly rings, towards the paper of cakes, took up one and devoured it, displaying her big false teeth ghoulishly. Meantime, she talked in a hoarse tone of the political situation in the Balkans. She built great hopes on some complication in the peninsula for arousing a great movement of national indignation in Russia against these thieves. You will only upset yourself, Peter Ivanovich interposed, raising his glassy gaze. He smoked cigarettes and drank tea in silence, continuously. When he had finished a glass, he flourished his hand above his shoulder. At that signal, the lady companion, ensconced in her corner, with round eyes like a watchful animal, would dart out to the table and pour him out another tumblerful. Razumov looked at her once or twice. She was anxious, tremulous, though neither Madame de S. nor Peter Ivanovich paid the slightest attention to her. What have they done between them to that forlorn creature? Razumov asked himself. Have they terrified her out of her senses with ghosts, or simply have they only been beating her? When she gave him his second glass of tea, he noticed that her lips trembled in the manner of a scared person about to burst into speech. But of course she said nothing, and retired into her corner, as if hugging to herself the smile of thanks he gave her. She may be worth cultivating, thought Razumov suddenly. He was calming down, getting hold of the actuality into which he had been thrown for the first time perhaps since Victor Alden had entered his room. And had gone out again. He was distinctly aware of being the object of the famous or notorious Madame de S.'s ghastly graciousness. Madame de S. was pleased to discover that this young man was different from the other types of revolutionist members of committees, secret emissaries, vulgar and unmannerly fugitive professors, rough students, ex-cobblers with apostolic faces, consumptive and ragged. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.